AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Wait, what? Did anybody tell Davis? We did tell Davis? Did he show up for work? He's here? Huh. Well, that's cool. Surprising, but cool. Okay, let's get this thing going because, listen up, and especially livestock producers, we got a ton of information coming your way.
Live from Toboggan Day Morn via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Undersecretary Greg Ibach. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Nick Giordano and Chad Lehman. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Are you okay, buddy? Is everything okay?
I've decided to distract myself. Instead of making up words and suffixes and such.
Right.
Today is not hump day. Any other week it would be hump day. It's the hump day I keep saying Thanksgiving instead of Christmas. It's the hump day right before Christmas. I'm renaming this day Toboggan Day.
Okay,
Toboggan Day.
That. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
We're sliding on into the holiday as though down a snowy hill with our scarves and our joy and our rosy cheeks.
Right. I think that's a good idea. And if you use a little bit of the non-nutritive food varnish on the bottom of it, I've heard...
Best if it's not osmotic is what I'm hearing. Non-osmotic.
That's right. I've heard that it really it gives you that extra boost of speed going down the hill.
It can be hard on government plastic, though. As I understand, that extra boost of speed.
You know, because over here, telling you, I feel like I should say it, Davis. I feel like I should say it.
Say hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Oh, we're so glad that you could join us today. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis. And yeah, it's still not settled on the stimulus package, dude. I'm a little surprised, but it's still not settled.
At this point, it's like, well, I guess I've got something to report on. I'm chalking it up to job security. This way I have something to do.
Tip of the hat to President Trump. Thank you for keeping my job.
See, he is saving jobs.
Wow. Love it. Love it. All right. And with that, let's go ahead and jump right into it. Let's get the details.
This is the news. President Donald Trump says he will not sign the pending omnibus appropriations or coronavirus relief package. He told telling Americans the tax rebates aren't big enough and that the measure is littered with unnecessary spending. Officials close to the president suggest Trump is likely just expressing his displeasure with the deal and have downplayed the potential for a veto. Trump criticized the coronavirus relief deal passed by Congress, saying the bill has, quote, almost nothing to do with COVID, and called on lawmakers to increase direct payments to Americans to $2,000 from $600. Some also say Trump was confusing the COVID aid bill with the massive omnibus spending measure. I think maybe was he thinking of both of them sort of at the same time as a package?
Oh,
you know, we can get them passed together. Well, we're going to get them vetoed together,
and
sort of being the thought.
And they are one bill. They are under one bill number. That is true, but there's two separate components in that bill. I'm telling you, if he had line item veto power, his highlighter would be, looking for the third or fourth highlighter right now to highlight the lines that need to be vetoed from this bill. And it would be... It would be money going to foreign countries. And you know what? I might not have a problem with that. Now, do I know what each and every penny is used for in those grants, those aids, those whatever it is? No, I don't. So if I did, maybe I'd say, you know what? I do want to support education in Pakistan mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I do want to support that. I might say that. But on the other hand, I might also look at money going to Egypt and saying, I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, we don't mean to shill for Trump here, but, you know, it is possible that he's right in looking at some of this and that people, you know, trying to push some stuff through, maybe sneak it under the radar, just on coronavirus stimulus news fatigue, saying, we'll just get this jammed through. Nobody will even read it. They just wanted to have it done that badly. We can put whatever we want in here. Maybe it's a good thing.
And I'm gonna go ahead and throw this out for you, too. What was it, October, when mm-hmm. Trump was at $1.something trillion and mm-hmm. offered it up, and Democrat leadership in the House said, no, we're not going to do that. You know, we talked about it with Cindy Axne two free-for-alls ago. Democrat leadership in the House missed their opportunity weeks ago mm-hmm. to get this done. I'm not going to listen to anything else about that. Okay, go ahead, Davis.
Fair enough. Well, the latest round of Chinese customs data showed the country imported 330,000 tons of pork in November, up 43.7% from a year ago. But did I see that steady with last month? So we may be leveling off, actually.
Yeah,
here.
But it's still up more than 40% from last year.
The U.S. Trade Representative's office has denied a request to delay a Vietnam currency investigation. Also, this data released by the Environmental Protection Agency showed another increase in the level of small refinery exemptions requested by refiners relative to the renewable fuels standard. The U.S. Department of Commerce reduced the subsidy rate that OCP SA of Morocco would face on phosphate exports to the U.S.
Okay.
And global cases of COVID-19 at 78 million in the U.S. case count 18.2 million at 323,000 deaths here in the U.S. Chip.
Wow. Big numbers. Big numbers there, no doubt. Davis, thank you so much. And if you would, mm-hmm. keep us up to date with what's going on with the stimulus bill. I'd appreciate
it. Oh, you better believe it. I got nothing else to do.
Good. Let's bring in Margie Echelkamp, the editor of The Scoop. Margie, how you doing this morning?
Hey, Chip, I'm doing well. I feel like I need to help simmer things down so you can bring them back to a boil with today's Farmer Forum, maybe.
That's right. Good stuff. Margie, tell me, what's going on with the new product of the year votes? What's happening there?
This is an annual program we run every year to highlight those products that have a big effect and improvement to the ag retail industry. So this is a year-end contest. Let's look back at 2020 and maybe highlight something that went well, something that helped us farm better, and give an award to those products that have really made a difference. If folks want to vote, it's available at thedailyscoop.com. And right in the top bar, you will see new product of the year. So click on that and you are welcome to vote. We are setting the deadline for votes next week. So the deadline is December 31st.
All right. Here's your chance. What are you looking forward to the most in 2021?
Oh, Chip, you're putting me on the spot, aren't you?
Sorry.
You know what? I will share. I'm looking forward to agriculture responding yet again and putting in a strong crop despite all the hurdles, obstacles, and challenges thrown their way.
Love it. Good stuff. Merry Christmas, Margie. We'll talk to you next week.
Merry Christmas to all and Happy New Year.
All right. Excellent. That is Margie Echelkamp, editor of The Scoop. You can find her at Farmers Advisor on Twitter. Okay, we're going to get to the bottom line of some oversight and rules and regulations on biotech in animal agriculture. That's coming up. We've got USDA Undersecretary Greg Ibach coming up next on AgriTalk.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%. Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgro, and Bear Plus Rewards. Perform like a champion each and every season.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Last year, President Trump ordered federal agencies to modernize, streamline the approval process for biotech products used in farming, and USDA is following through on those orders today with an advance notice of proposed rulemaking that will be published in the Federal Register. Greg Ibaugh, USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, joins us right now with the details. Undersecretary Ibaugh, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be able to visit with you about this exciting announcement and exciting path forward for animal biotechnology here in the United States.
Animal biotechnology. When we talk biotech, Undersecretary Ibaugh, we're used to talking about it with plants, but this is biotech that's put to use in animals, correct?
That's correct. You know, we this year we moved forward with the SECURE rule, which paved the way for the first update for plant biotechnology regulation in 30 years. And we've continued to work and using APHIS's animal health authorities and FSIS's food safety authorities, we now have a proposal that we would like to take comments on where we would use those authorities to be able to provide a safe, seamless, predictable, a science-based way forward to approve animal biotechnology traits.
Okay, so that would move the rules and regulatory process. Would it move it from from FDA to USDA, or how does it settle right now, and where would it end up after the proposal?
So right now, FDA has taken a look at the food animal biotechnology traits and has attempted to regulate them under their drug authorities. And as we know, these don't represent drugs. They are alterations that enhance health, enhance animal welfare, traits like the hornless Holstein cow that was developed by Allison Van Eneman. So being able to find a path forward and working with FDA to identify a path forward using our animal health and food safety regulatory authorities for food animals is progress. FDA would still maintain authority over animals that have biotechnology traits that allow for biomedical or pharmaceutical uses.
Okay. I gotcha. Now, so are we talking primarily then, I would assume that we're talking about animal health biotech advances, or are we including some performance tech traits?
So any traits that we can identify or segregate in a species right now that would allow that trait to be able to predictably show up all the time, or so like in cattle, Angus have a poll gene, but in Holsteins they do not. So if we within that species can move that gene over and make it so that without going through multiple years of generations of the animal and losing milk quality or other production traits, we can move that single gene over to make it show up all the time in Holsteins. That would improve, eliminate dehorning, which in many cases is a animal stress factor.
Yeah. You know, this seems like it seems like common sense to have this at USDA rather than FDA. But that's from a farm boy's perspective, like you've gotten, like I've got. talking to a consumer, how do you explain that this belongs at USDA rather than FDA?
Each and every day, and for the past 30 years, USDA has regulated plant biotechnology, and we've identified traits and advances in plants that have improved the availability of food for consumers across the world and lessen the amount of herbicides and pesticides used to produce crops. And we've done that successfully without any adverse side effects. We can use the same food safety and animal health statutes there where we have authorities to regulate animals to apply them to animal biotechnology. And we think we have a track record that can assure consumers that we can do this safely. We can make sure that there are no allergens or any food safety issues that they would be concerned about as we do this regulatory approval process.
Gotcha. It just seems to me that what this would do is put the U.S. We've always been a leader in livestock genetics, but this would be like a quantum leap forward by moving the regulatory process from FDA to USDA to give to just because it would be giving the breeders a certain level and the researchers a certain level of confidence going forward, right?
That's correct. Right now, we don't have predictability and we don't have a clear path forward. As we have researchers developing these technologies, they're actually going to Canada, to Brazil, to Argentina, and to China to be able to commercialize these technologies because we do not have a clear path forward in the U.S. This will help us be able to put America farmers and ranchers first, put them in the driver's seat if we can develop a predictable regulatory authority that will give them access to these traits and not their foreign competitors.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what is the process from this point forward? It's going to be published in the Federal Register when?
Later this week, on the 28th of December, the Federal Register will have the posting that will begin a 60-day comment period, and we would encourage all interested parties to give input about what they would like to see and what the advantages they see to USDA moving forward with a rulemaking and what factors would be important in a proposed rule from USDA.
Okay, so that 60-day period would get us past the 20th of January, but the Secretary Perdue must be moving forward with this with the idea that the next set of leaders at USDA would want this as well.
Yeah, we think this is something that is very good for agriculture.
Yep.
And that it's not administration driven. It will be just as good for agriculture today as it will be in 30, 60, or 360 days from today. And so we believe that we'll see a strong response from agriculture and animal agriculture especially, and we anticipate that the comments that we will receive will be used by the next administration as they contemplate moving forward with a rule.
So, Undersecretary Ibaugh, bottom line it, what does this mean for U.S. animal agriculture?
This provides an opportunity for U.S. animal agriculture to be able to catch up with our competitors worldwide, since Canada, Argentina, Brazil, and China all have paths forwards for animal biotechnology that improves animal health and animal welfare, and we do not. This will help our producers be able to use less antibiotics, treat less sick animals, and be able to eliminate traits that, like horns, that cause animal stress as in the production cycle?
You know, one of the ways that I always look at policy decisions coming out of USDA or out of the government is by asking those involved with it, what's going to be the thought process on this 5 years from now? Are we going to look back at it and say, boy, it's a good thing we did that then?
Well, I certainly hope so, and because I think there's already people within the animal ag industry that feel like this is late coming to them and that they wish it would have evolved several years ago.
Gotcha. Secretary Ibaugh, thank you so much for your time today, for your time under the Trump administration and everything that you've done at USDA over the last 4 years. Really appreciate all that you've done.
Well, I have certainly appreciated the opportunity, and I feel very good about some of the things that the president and the secretary have allowed us to accomplish within AMS and APHIS over the last 4 years. And so thank you very much.
Spectacular. That is USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Greg Ibaugh. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in just a moment.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. Wilson, yesterday I was already saying that maybe this bean market has run a little too far, a little too fast, and here we are running again today, man. What's going on?
I think the rally is very surprising considering this is the last full trading session of this holiday abbreviated week. The story is we still have the Argentine port strike in place. It's the 14th day. That's raising ideas that we're going to see more exports of corn, soybean meal, soybean oil, and wheat. And so that's got the market going good. Markets basically ignored export sales this morning for corn and beans that were marketing year lows, which kind of suggests that the story is we're not worried about export sales right now. We're worried about rationing demand.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen that yet. So that's the story. And the funds are jumping all over it. They're jumping in at a time when most people didn't think they would come, you know, roaring back in here. But the charts are bullish. And, you know, every time the market dips, they're there to buy it. And until it stops, it's going to keep going higher.
Yep. Good stuff.
Even wheat joined the trip today.
Yeah. Yeah, wheat's playing along. It's really pretty surprising. Anything in that cold storage report yesterday that we need to be aware of?
I think the most important thing, and one of the reasons why the hogs are up this morning, is that we had the smallest amount of pork in the freezer for the month since November, or for the November in 23 years, and that's pretty dang tight. So if we get a smaller number in the hogs and pigs report, then that sets up a good tone going into 2021.
Jeff, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer, Senior Market Analyst.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
And it's Wednesday. That means it's time for the Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk. Get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement to unlock more economic and environmental value from your operation. Download the free resource at www.agweb.com/ACAM. Yes, it's a Farmer Forum. But it's kind of a modified farmer forum because there's so much going on for the hog industry right now. First, let's bring in Chad Lehman, farmer from Illinois. He joins us right now. Chad, it's good to talk with you again. How are you, man?
Hey, good morning, Chip. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, special guest, Nick Giordano is the NPPC, National Pork Producer Council, Vice President and Counsel for Global Government Affairs. He joins us right now. Nick, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm real good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Chad, you know what to do on this. Jump in if you've got any questions for Nick as we go through this. But, Nick, I want to start with this. The decision to move approval, oversight of biotech in animals from FDA to USDA, or the proposal to do that, it's going to be published in the Federal Register. We just talked about it with USDA Undersecretary Eyeball on the show. I'll ask you what I asked Greg. How important of a decision is this for the hog industry, Nick?
Well, this is huge. This is about the future. So this, you know, for a lot of folks in the industry, it's not a today issue. But we've got to today establish a regulatory framework that's science-based and going to work. And we don't have one today. Whereas our competitors, as you heard under Secretary Eyebach say, they're out in front of us. So it's a serious matter. We're not talking today about consumer acceptance. We're not on the precipice of introducing new products tomorrow. This is about who's going to regulate. USDA has the expertise. We're very fortunate that Secretary Perdue, under Secretary Eyebach, and folks at USDA and the White House has agreed with them. USDA should be in charge, not FDA.
I don't want to speculate on this too much, Nick, but I feel like we need to add some perspective to it. To me, this feels like a decision that expected incoming USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack will agree with.
We certainly would hope so. I mean, why not? Nobody wants to see innovation and U.S. jobs shipped out of the country. And ultimately, that's what's at stake. FDA is behaving like they're the practitioners of the precautionary principle. This isn't the European Union. And USDA's got the experience. They need to be in the driver's seat. We're hopeful that Secretary Vilsack will support what Secretary Perdue is doing.
Okay, we're putting a spotlight on this today, Nick, but I think we need to add some perspective to it. How long have you been working on this to support moving from FDA to USDA?
For quite some time, and we've been pushing it hard for at least 3 years.
Yeah, this has been a front burner issue for animal agriculture for a long time. So if you want to take a victory lap on this one, Nick, you can go ahead and do that, but we still need to get through the public comment period, right?
Yeah, this is just an advance notice of public rulemaking. So there's going to be a preliminary rule and a final rule. So everybody's going to have their opportunity to comment. We're working on our comments. And again, as I said, this isn't about products imminently coming to the market. So NPPC is always going to support consumer choice and the producer's choice to determine how they want to produce their animals, the products they want to use in the production process. All we're trying to do is make sure the United States stays in the game and we have a science-based, reasonable regulatory framework.
Right, right. Chad, curious, what are your thoughts on this? It seems like from a producer's point of view, that this ought to make sense as well.
Yeah, I agree with Nick on this. It is something NPPC has been working on for some time. And on the producer side of things, give us the products and let us make the decisions about what works best on each of our farms.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I agree. And this is just going to give the breeders out there an opportunity to bring more of those products to you. You know, Nick, one of the things that that Undersecretary Eyebaugh mentioned a couple of times was the gene editing to get the horns off the heads of Holstein cows. That's a animal health. That's a safety. That's a, you know, taking stress off those animals because they're going to be pulled or they're going to be dehorned at some point. But in the hog industry, could we be looking at bringing in some performance traits in the future?
I think you're going to be looking at all sorts of things that span the environment and the animal health, welfare, less antibiotics used.
Yep.
I mean, this is very promising. And consumers need to keep in mind here that these are changes that can be made through conventional breeding. This is just a much quicker and more cost-effective things to do that we believe a lot of producers will be interested in, a lot of consumers will be interested in, but ultimately it's their decision. All we're trying to do is keep the United States farmer in the game, keep the United States consumer in the game, so this is an option. If we have a regulatory framework that doesn't work, which is currently what we have at FDA, then we're not in the ball game.
Right. Right. Gotcha. Okay. Let's go over to the stimulus package. One of the things that I've been waiting to see for quite a while here. It's good to see that at least some of the costs of taking those market ready hogs out of the supply chain is being addressed. What are the details on that, Nick?
Well, it's a big deal. I mean, you know, you look at how people reacting sector after sector got left behind. I mean, this was a relatively small package compared to what members of Congress were talking about. And the pork industry did very well here. So we're really excited. I mean, we're excited about not only being able to get some compensation to producers who had to put animals down. We're extraordinarily excited that we got $635 million to secure our borders and to fully fund our inspectors to keep African swine fever and other disease out of the country. We got $20 million for the labs. This is really important, and these are things that MPPC has spent the better part of 2020 working on.
Right. Chad, that compensation going back to producers that had to euthanize some hogs just wasn't room for them in the supply chain. 80% of the value of the animal plus some covering some of the expense, at least some of the expense to dispose of those animals. Chad, there's growers out there that have been looking for this for a long time.
Yeah, no question about it. That's the pain happened a while ago. And this isn't going to make those producers whole, but it at least helps alleviate some of the costs that were associated with it. The disposal piece of it was very difficult for those who had to euthanize market ready pigs. And so it was a costly event, obviously. And there's still, you know, quite a bit of uncertainty as to exactly how many animals that had to be euthanized.
Right. And it is good to see some of that cost offset there. What else is in the stimulus package, Nick, that we specifically the COVID stimulus package that we need to be aware of?
Well, again, for they melded together the appropriations and the COVID package. So for us, the euthanization, as Chad has pointed out, and thanks to Chad and so many producers who make this happen, it's obviously not just us folks in the suits in Washington, but it's rank and file producers across the country like Chad that made this happen. But in the appropriations, we got $635 million to secure our borders. And typically these are funded through user fees, through travel. And with travel being down because of COVID, we had a five alarm fire potentially brewing here. And with the number one priority of our trade association and obviously most producers across the country to keep African swine fever out, foot and mouth disease and so on, this is huge. And this impacts not only us, not only livestock, but the plant side as well. But I'd say MPPC did a disproportionate amount of the lifting here. We've been talking about this since the summer. We made a run at it in the CR in September. We weren't successful. We tried again December 11th when the CR was extended. And finally, a success. This is a really big deal. We also got $20 million in funding for the National Animal Health Laboratory Network. And that's critically important as mm-hmm. well when you talk about animal health.
Yeah. Yeah, the funding for the research, Nick, that is included in the spending bill is so critical for disease control and advancing animal agriculture here in the United States. No question about that. Hey, Nick, you are welcome to stick around for the final segment of today's Farmer Forum. If not, we understand that too. I want to thank you for your time and the details that we got from you on how important this the transition of oversight on the biotech and animal eggs from FDA over to USDA. So important. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. That's Nick Giordano. He is the NPPC Vice President and Counsel for Global Government Affairs. Chad Lehman, producer over in Illinois. Stick around, man. I want to find out what you're thinking for 2021. That's next on AgriTalk.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Trust in Food for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Yeah, it's a long list of sponsors there on America's conservation ag movement. You've got Trust in Food, Farm Journal Foundation, NRCS, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, National Corn Growers, National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, Syngenta, The Nature Conservancy, and Valent are all on that list. And thank you to ACAM for sponsoring the Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk. Nick Giordano from NPPC is sticking around for the conversation. Thank you for doing that, Nick. And Chad Lehman, producer over in Illinois, joins us. I want to talk some production issues now, guys. So I'm gonna go to Chad on this. At the bottom of the hour, we had Jeff Wilson on talking about what's going on in these markets. And jeepers, criminy. I mean, we're talking about $4.50 futures here, Chad, in corn. We're talking about $420 futures in soybean meal. We got the hogs and pigs report coming out this afternoon that is supposed to be showing us what is going to happen in the future. But I don't know if the H&P report is going to reflect this higher level of feed costs, Chad. So this is going to have an impact on you in 2021, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. The feed situation has changed drastically in the last couple months. And so just so you think about this, a pig will eat about 9 bushel of corn from wean to finish and say about 125 pounds of meal per head. So if, you know, for every dollar the corn price goes up, that increase your cost per head $9. So for every dollar the corn price goes up, $9 a head in increased feed costs.
Right. Right.
So it's going to, you know, you look at your target weights that you want to ship at, and it's no longer near as efficient to put that last 10 to 15 pounds on a pig as it was back in July or August.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, well, with that in mind, I would like to say, Chad, that that's going to mean that we're going to see some smaller or some lighter kill weights coming ahead. But it seems like once we figure out how to put the pounds on a pig, we don't start taking them off.
No, you know, we're feeding new corn, yeah, you know, stuff that's been harvested in the last couple months. And pigs always start eating better when they start getting new corn in the diets. And yeah, and so, and cooler weather obviously helps pigs grow. And so weights are ticking up. And, you know, as packers continue to have issues getting pigs harvested, mm-hmm, and they start to back up on farms, then obviously that just really spirals downward when it comes to weight issues as well.
Right. Chad, what is the situation with hog movement right now? The plant at Columbus Junction, as I understand, is it still down?
Yeah, so Tyson's plant at Columbus Junction went down, I want to say, about 2 weeks ago. They had a fire in their main control room, and I would say about, so 40 to 50% of our pigs go there. And So they haven't processed a pig in 2 weeks, and they, talking to their plant manager last night, he told me, we won't be up and running until the 4th of January at best. That's a 10,000 pig per day plant. And so now you're sending pig, we're sending a lot of pigs out to the Tyson plant in Logansport, Indiana to try to make up for it. But I'm back to talking to you about holding diets again, unfortunately.
That's no good. That's no good. Nick, this is, you know, the shackle space, the capacity of the industry is something that has been a topic of conversation at the highest levels for a long time.
Of course, we got the Defense Production Act triggered. I mean, MPPC was all over that. And you all know we don't need to rehash the carnage of this spring, but capacity is something we watch closely, and what we've been working on more recently that relates to capacity is making sure that the workers in the plants get priority treatment for the vaccines. And so far, we're on target. We just had the CDC Advisory Committee vote. I think there was only one vote the other way. It was almost unanimous that these folks be included in 1B. Now, ultimately, that's not binding on the states, and these are all going to be state decisions, but I think it bodes pretty well. So, yeah, we're very sensitive to this capacity issue. It sends shockwaves back to the producers.
Yes, certainly does. Certainly does. You know, both of you guys, a year ago right now, we were looking forward to 2020 as a year of recovery for the hog industry. And then, of course, disruption all over the place. Chad, do you kind of feel like we're back where we were a year ago, hopeful that we can get into a recovery mode?
Yeah, I'm hopeful we can. I mean, if you look at futures prices out beyond April and into June, July, August, there's some profitability there as long as we don't have another black swan. You know, Nick referred to African swine fever a little bit earlier and how important it is that we keep it out. I don't think people understand the urgency in keeping that out. If we get a case of African swine fever here, that's the final straw for a number of producers, you know, coming off of COVID and all the issues of 2020. If we can't keep ASF out, that spells doom and gloom. So we got to keep that out.
Nick, that's a big amen from you on that one, isn't it?
Of course. And I'll tell you something else we're looking at is Vietnam. And there's a hearing next week, USDR, and we don't want any, we don't need any more duties. Punitive duties on pork. So we're watching that closely, and we'll be testifying
excellent
on Tuesday.
Excellent. You guys, we are out of time. I feel like we could have done this for 3 hours. Nick, thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Nick Giordano, NPPC Vice President and Counsel for Global Government Affairs. And Chad Lehman, Merry Christmas to you, buddy. Good luck.
Likewise, Chip. Thanks again for having me on. Have a great Christmas.
Yep, thank you. You got to come back this afternoon. Garrett Toy, Ag Trader talking first commodities right here on AgriTalk.